migrant children under the care of the Home Office who went missing from hotels in the UK. We find out what's being done to find them and why so many have disappeared. That's in File on 4 at 8 o'clock. The comedian Mark Watson re-embarks on his doomed quest to understand life in just a moment. Perhaps he should just listen to BBC Sounds.
Whatever you're looking for, we've got sounds for that.
Join us for topical conversation that informs, challenges, inspires, and really gets you thinking on Woman's Hour.
Or relax and unwind with the rich musical textures of a mindful mix.
Or throw caution to the wind and enjoy Friday night comedy whenever you darn well please, like on a Tuesday or even not at night, with the sensationally time-flexible Friday Night Comedy Podcast.
Music, radio, podcasts. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Now on BBC Radio 4, Mark Watson talks a bit about life with his house band Flo and Joan and this week's special guest, Thursday's child, Sakisa.
Mark Watson talks, he's still rattling on, talking about some stuff, probably very right wing. Mark Watson talks a bit about life, mostly his.
Thank you very much. Good evening. Did you sing probably very right wing?
I think you hear what you want to hear. So.
Yeah, but I don't think I did want to hear that. Welcome to Mark Watson Talks About My Life. If you're a Radio 4 listener but you've not listened to this before, basically, it's a bit like In Our Time. Except Melvin Bragg isn't in it and there's no point. That's not true. I do have an agenda, which is to examine our journey through life via the prism of the Monday's Child is Full of Grace poem, and that in turn is an attempt to make sense of the confusing human experience that we all go through. Soren Kierkegaard famously said, life can only be understood backwards but must be lived forwards, which really narks me off, actually. I love that quote. Kierkegaard was Wednesday's child, like me, full of woe, and he was right to be full of woe. He died at my age because of complications from falling out of a tree. So, not that clever, were you, pal? Ever since I heard that, I've been terrified of the same thing happening to me. But actually, it turns out you can safeguard against it pretty well by, yeah, you've guessed it, not getting in trees. Tonight, it is the turn of Thursday. And Thursday's child, do we know? Yes, as far to go. Despite being born on the woe day, I've always felt, of all of them, this is the one I've most have liked. I've always been ambitious to see the most of life I could and put pressure on myself to go that bit further, be that bit better. I think it maybe comes from my parents' expectations. My mum often used to say, oh, you'll go far, you've got a bright future, this sort of thing. I'm the oldest of four, and my siblings and I all get on very well, we're a gang, but there is a running joke among them that I'm my mum's favourite. She's a bit biased towards me, and the funny thing about the joke is, it is true. Definitely. My mum's reputation with the other siblings has never really recovered from, there was this Christmas a few years ago where all four of us walked into a room together, and she pointed at me and went, there he is. A long way back from there, really. But with that sort of hype comes pressure, of course. So is having far to go an exciting incentive in life or a burden? To discuss it a little bit, I'm joined, as ever, by, first of all, Flo and Joan, the Anton Deck of the South. And as well as Flo and Joan, we have the brilliant comedian, my friend, Sakisa. Sakisa, you're a Thursday's child.
Yes, I am. Thursday's a new Friday.
That's going to be confusing. What happens on Friday, then? You get a lot of that, like 30 is the new 50. Oh, no, the other way around, isn't it? That'd be really bad news, actually. I hear you're 40. 40 is the new 95. When you were growing up, did you know about the whole Thursday child has far to go thing? Did you?
No, I have West Indian parents. They don't care about rhyming. No.
I didn't know West Indians didn't do rhyming.
Not for me anyway, not in my household. Yeah, no. Also, can I just say that? I did meet your brother the other day and he did say that you were the favourite. Well, I'm not the favourite child, even though I'm the only child.
That's a bit unlucky. You would have expected to have a chance.
Yeah, I'm not. So there was a lot of pressure on me to do well, to go far. My mum was basically like, you've either got to do law, be a doctor, or be dead.
Which one did you go for?
Law.
Sure, so you are weirdly a lawyer as well as a comedian, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, anyone wants a British passport, come find me.
We'll probably do it after the show.
Yeah. And
Flo and Joan, now, obviously, I mean, Sakisa can talk about her West Indian heritage, but you're no stranger to going far. We're recording this in London, and yet you were born in Hampshire, more than an hour away. So I wondered if you had any songs about travel or Thursday up any of your sort of four sleeves.
We do, but how do you know that we were born in Hampshire?
Yeah.
Just like very minor bit of Googling. Because we've been working together for a bit now, I just sort of armed myself with some basic information.
You could just ask us, Mark.
You know, I just, in the end, I went for Google.
Okay. Yeah. We spent the whole of last year touring the country and the world. And we say world because we played one city in Australia and one night in rural Canada. And so we will definitely say it's a worldwide tour. And it was a very long tour.
Yeah, we saw Gareth Malone on BBC Breakfast talking about his Christmas choir tour and saying that he was really tired by it. And it was 14 dates. And I near on ripped the television out the wall when we were on day 136 about to drive 7 hours to Redruth.
But it's all right because I don't know if you know, Mark, I don't know if you've ever done a tour, but our tour is pretty rock and roll.
I'm very similar. I think it's what people know me for.
Yeah. Okay, so here's then a song.
Let us tell you about life on the road. It's freaky and it's crazy and it's called rock and roll. Shredding people's ears with a shaker and piano. Yeah, it's a rock and roll musical. Comedy light. Yeah, 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 baby, baby, baby. We do lots of drugs, class A, B and C. And when we say drugs, we mean cod liver oil. And every night, neck and chamomile tea. Yeah, musical comedy's never been so sexy. Rock and roll, musical comedy life. Marks and Spencer meal deals every night. In the tour van we listen to Stephen Sondheim. It's a rock and roll, musical comedy life.
That was my mouth.
Everybody clap your hands and stamp your feet. Like you do on songs of praise. How do we travel around the country in a people carrier? The kind you put your family in. What do we eat to stay rock and roll? We eat wet eggs at a budget hotel. And what do we do on our days off? Ooh. What do we do on our days off? Ooh. What do we do on our days off? We go. Watching rock and roll musical comedy line. Getting kicked out of venues every night. Cause art centers close at 11 p.m. Yeah, it's a rock and roll musical comedy line.
Thank you very much, Flo and Joan. They'll have been singing along with that one down at St Paul's Primary School. Available on the internet, all this information. And your top 10 teachers in descending order. Well, I tried to work out when I started to be perhaps unhealthily interested in going far and achieving. I have to go back at least to my own school days. I don't think the pressure comes from my education itself. The school I went to is quite posh looking, but it was also very middle class and cosy, so it didn't have the associations of brutality which some of those schools have. The teachers did beat us, but only at backgammon. And to give a sense of my mentality in those days, well over a century ago now, I have to call upon a fun little anecdote. This one is tainted in my mind by the fact that I think I come across as a bit of an arrogant young prick. So I'm going to ask Flo and Joan if the fun little anecdote sting could reflect that in some way.
Yes.
Fun little anecdote, anecdote said by a young little Moni, a bratty McBrat, brat, a squinny, a shwiny brat, baby boy Moni, young whiny brat, anecdote, Anna Karenina.
Now that covers it. During my sixth form days, I worked for 2 years at a supermarket. I'd love that to give me a little bit of keeping it real. Kudos, like I was at the coalface before I became a comedian, but it's Waitrose, so... not that much of a coalface. A wood burner, maybe. Chimenea. That said, the job was not a picnic, although we were a leading supplier. Two picnics, of course. For a start, this supermarket was pretty near my school, so you'd sometimes get your teachers as customers, which, and it's hard to explain why, but there's this weird kind of dread on both sides about the idea of a teacher-pupil meet-up, like in the wild. No, you can't be having chicken tonight, you're a history teacher. A friend of mine once saw his maths teacher with his private parts out in a swimming pool changing room, and he left school the next week. There are also a lot of indignities attached to being under 18 and having a supermarket job. You'll remember, if you've done it, I wasn't allowed to sell alcohol. Every time someone bought any booze, I had to put my dunce light on. And hello, I'm not allowed to hold the gin. Can an adult help? Which, when you look back, is absolutely mad. Obviously, you can't drink under 18, but why can't you hold... why can't you scan it? They think I was just going to open the bottle of Prosecco and go, one for me, one for you. But the worst thing about the checkout job was because of the exclusivity of the place. There was a higher than usual quotient of unpleasant customers. And one time I served what I can only describe as a bully. I can only describe him that way, at least, on Radio 4 at 6:30. But DM me and I'll send you the real words. At that time, Waitrose stocked a range of fruit and vegetables, which I'd previously only read about in books of myths and legends. This is a big, scary guy in a trench coat. He had a bag which, now if someone here will be able to identify these just from the description, they were like plums, same sort of size and shape and everything, but unripe plums. Anyone?
Green gauges.
Green gauges, very good, although a couple of bizarre guesses.
Green gauges sounds insane.
Have you never had one? Have you never had one?
Green gauge uproar here behind me.
It just doesn't sound like a fruit. It sounds like a...
Right, this is my point.
It sounds like an old man hiding in the tree in folklore.
Exactly, and this guy might have been that.
Watch out, Green Gages is about.
Yeah. We're thinking of Jeremy Beadle, is it?
Same sort of thing. They were all things we had in the 90s. But this is the thing. I was in, I don't know, Flo or Jones' position. Of course I know which one is which. It's all very well joking about, ooh, who's who, but we now know. I know, if anything, too much. But yeah, the country will be split between that response and people at Sakisa going, what, don't you know green? And I'm sure at home there'll be people angrily shouting green cages, obviously, at their radios, but none of you will be as angry as this man. I had to ask him to identify them, obviously, so that I could weigh them, and he yelled, green gauges, they're green gauges. It's like you said, it's one of the weirdest words I've ever had yelled in my face. It's just, it's like having someone shout patio or Toblerone. I said, I'm sorry, sir, I've just not come across these before, and he looked at me like I said, I've not seen a cow yet in my life. He said, but do they not teach you anything at school? Are you even at school? And I blurted out, I'm going to Cambridge University. You can take a minute to guess whether that made me more or less popular with my colleagues at the other checkout. Yes, your guess is correct. And the worst thing about it was, I'd applied. But this is the thing about the far to go mentality. I didn't want to feel like this anymore. I wanted to have some sort of status myself, not to be someone you could just yell green gauges at. And in the end, I did get a provisional offer from the university, and it became my obsession. I worked incredibly hard to get the grades that I needed. My reputation as Bristol's biggest, maddest party animal went overnight. In fact, people began to act as if I never had that reputation. Results day came and I had to go into school to learn my fate. As I say that, it sounds old-fashioned. I can't imagine in the digital age they surely don't make you physically show up like in the court of the king. They must just email, or I wouldn't be surprised if these days they just text kids a single emoji. It's the face crying a single tear. I think I'm going to my second choice here. But in those days, it was a real pageantry. My dad drove me in. He was a teacher at the school, as I've mentioned before. Yeah, he had an excuse to go into the hall with me, ramping up the drama even more. We walked up the stairs past a distraught, weeping girl who was the only other person who'd had the same offer. I could have done without seeing that. It's fine, she went to Exeter, loved it. Into the hall, given the envelope, ripped it open, hands are shaking, and I had the grades. It's fine, made it. But much bigger stuff has happened to me since, of course, both good and bad. But at the time, it felt like a defining moment in my life. And I handed the sheet to my dad. He was ecstatic. I couldn't speak. He thought I was overcome by emotion. But actually, all that was in my head in that moment was, suck it, Green Gages guy. My whole A-level campaign was about him. He'll be 90 now, but I'd still recognise him outside now. I mean, he's not, presumably not here now, are you? Obviously, exam results, university, these are high-stakes things. It's legitimate to be nervous about them. But was it a good thing to have such a results-driven mentality so young? Sakisa, I'm interested in your relationship with this. You've done a lot in your life. You're, for a start, you're an immigration lawyer, yeah. Also a comedian.
Yeah.
I mean, also you do burlesque.
I do your burlesque as well.
You don't necessarily think of burlesque and
yeah,
the
you
law.
Don't get to see it. You ain't paid enough.
A couple of people sounded briefly hopeful there. But yeah, you've obviously crammed a lot in.
I crammed a lot in, but also, like, when I say lawyer, people assume that I'm made of money. I'm not. I'm a working class person. Someone actually asked me the other day, oh, well, you're a lawyer, aren't you a middle class? And I was like, no, I still live on a council estate. And I think that's an amazing thing for me to do. Growing up as the only child, I always wanted to make my parents proud. And everything I have, I own. So I think I'm probably proud of that. I basically worked a lot when I was at school. At university, I had 3 part-time jobs.
Probably none of them Waitrose, I'm guessing.
No. La Senza, though. Lots of lingerie and bra. Oh, someone remembers. Well done. Yes, yes.
La Senza, Athena of knickers. If you will.
And I worked in a pub as well, and that's where I discovered stand-up comedy. So if I didn't have the ambition to do something, I wouldn't be able to, like, do what I do now, which is have no sleep.
How do you imagine being a lawyer and also doing the gigs and all of it?
Currently, I work 4 days a week, then I gig 5 days a week, sometimes 6 days a week.
But that's already more days than there are in the week.
Yeah. Well, I've decided in 2023 that I was going to change that because I've had to, like, sacrifice a lot of things in my life, like seeing friends, seeing godchildren.
Mind you, sometimes with godchildren, you can sort of get away with it. Right? Yeah. It's not a real one.
They see me the same way they see God, like I don't exist.
That's where the phrase comes from, yeah. Some of you will like the incredible story of Flo and Joan, have had far to go to get here. I ask people to write on cards if they've had a noteworthy journey here tonight, or in more abstract terms, a sort of journey of the mind. Has anyone come from further than, well, yeah, from further than Hampshire, from further than Flo and Joan? Yeah, straight away at the front there. Trevor in Cornwall? What, for this? Good heavens. But it's not a good use of time, really. You do know this is on the radio.
I'll be in Wiltshire tonight.
I'll be in Wiltshire tonight, he says, mysteriously. Real James Bond stuff from this guy. Oh, thank you very much for coming. Anyone beat that? Hey, where have you come from?
Texas.
And that is the end of that game, I think. Wow, how long have you been in this country?
10 days.
10 days, I think.
You're visiting? It's not immigration. Okay.
I'm trying to move here.
You're trying to move it?
Oh, okay. Hello. Sakisa's on this. Like.
Stop that looking at me. Yeah.
Well, good luck moving here. I won't lie to you. Most people are going in the opposite direction. You've caught us in a slightly awkward 50 years. Well past the point where I was a bright young schoolboy or an undergraduate, my mum continued to be almost embarrassingly upbeat about my prospects. Ever since this show began in 2007, and she heard me on the radio for the first time and discovered I was a stand-up comedian and not, as I've been claiming, an architect. It's actually a very difficult one to bluff. You have to sort of keep drawing stuff. Her position has been ever since then that her boy is the best comedian in the world and all the rest of them should go to hell. And as you can imagine, it does make it quite tiring when the TV is on at my parents' house. Who's this man? He's not funny at all. Well, this is Chris Whitty. And quite a specific set of circumstances got him this gig. You can see why I was passed over for those gigs. You didn't see Whitty do many of them with a wine. person. I don't know, Mum. If I knew, it would go against the whole premise of The Masked Singer. Oh, I tell you who'd be good at this show. Me? Yes. Why don't they book you? Well, this is Poirot, and... And I don't blame my mum for this at all. The world of TV commissioning is very strange these days. The craze for masked shows bewilders me. I don't want to sound like an old man again, but especially when you think how much of 2020 and 21 we spent looking at nothing but masks. I don't understand who was out there going, this is cool, let's make it a permanent thing. I'd love to see no one's entire face again in my life. The masked singer, then there's the masked dancer. Where's it going to end? The masked pilot. This is your captain speaking. We're at a cruising altitude of 40,000 feet, but am I a pilot or Jason Manford? When the pandemic shut everything down, suddenly Far To Go became a distant memory in what literal and figurative senses. We lived through a bewildering period, all of us, in which the number of times you left the house in a day was restricted by law. Do you remember that bit where the government literally encouraged you to rat on people if they were out and about more than once in a 24-hour period? Has your neighbour been for a jog and been to Asda? Let's lock him up. I'm not saying these measures were excessive. Most of us did our best to follow them for the good of everyone. But it was a huge culture shock. If you are my sort of age and background, you grew up believing you could basically go anywhere, do anything that you wanted, you know, if you earned the money, and now suddenly there was no travel, no work, no adventure. Well, not quite no work. I did a lot of online shows, more than a lot of comedians. In fact, I embraced it. Some of them were really fun, but when they went wrong, you really were powerless. And the worst one I ever did was in Christmas 2020, the tail end of a year, which had begun with so much optimism doing the last series of this. Now things were grim, no more radio work. You couldn't even put the radio on without disinfecting it. And this gig was it's quite a bleak phrase, socially distanced Christmas corporate get-together. So an office party, but no one was in the office. There's just everyone in a separate Zoom window, alone with a Christmas jumper and a glass of Prosecco and a yearning for death. And it wasn't even Zoom. That was the problem. They used something called Microsoft Teams. The noise that goes through the room when you mention it is... For those who don't know, Microsoft Teams is like Zoom, like all of these things, but its USP, its special trick is it doesn't work. And so it's like trying to get into a meeting using a Nokia or a pager. But I got in, I logged into the meeting, and the guy gave me a lovely introduction. He said, you've seen him on Live at the Apollo, you've seen him on QI. As usual, when this sort of phrasing is used, quite a lot of them looked back and went, no, I have not. I have seen no such things. It doesn't matter. I was upbeat. I was just looking forward to doing something. He said, Mark Watson. And I was now spotlit on the screen. So half of it was now my face and half of the screen was the guy's face who'd introduced me. And I assume when I started talking, it would become just me. But nope, there he stayed, unfortunately. Not on purpose, he didn't know how to make himself disappear. I couldn't do it from my end. After a few minutes of this, I realised the whole thing was just going to be this, me and him. And obviously, I was desperate for the work. There wasn't any work, really, so I did the only thing I could, the contractual obligation, which, I'm not exaggerating, 45 minutes of stand-up to this one man's head. I was like doing a gig stuck in a lift. Obviously, we both tried our best. I was as funny as I could, but he laughed till he soiled himself, basically. He had to. I was staring in his eyes the whole time. Anyone from Ireland? Yes, I am, Mark. Yes, if you want. If it's helpful, I can be. We were both delighted when it was over. I've never clicked on leave meeting as fast in my life. And then the second time, because it didn't work the first time. Okay. Did you do online gigs and stuff?
I did do online gigs, and they were horrible. I did one to a dog.
Worst, my one audience member was human.
Yeah, but I did actually like the online shows. Are you just like, do your gig, and just shut your laptop and go to bed?
Yeah, whereas if we do that after this, it will look strange, I think.
Yeah.
Since we've been able to get together physically again, I've noticed my mum asking a lot fewer questions about my career, although she will have questions about this because she will be listening to this. Everyone at home, say hello to Margaret.
Yeah. Hello, Margaret.
That was the key, so, Mum. I've also tried myself to be a bit less frantic and sort of neurotic about it. Obviously, partly because it's just a relief to have it back. It's a relief to be able to, I was going to say reach out and touch the audience, but because of the conduct of some people in the industry, we're sort of encouraged not to use that exact phrase. Just be aware I could. But I'd like to think it's also because we've learned a lesson deep down. For almost 20 years, I've been rushing around everywhere. I've had far to go almost every week of my life, and I've had my brain pushing me to go further, work harder, do more, do better. And actually, most of what you need isn't out there at the end of a journey. It's waiting for you here in reach. On your deathbed, your final thoughts won't be about what you achieved, how far you went. It'll be about what you loved. I'm talking about your final thoughts, by the way. Mine will obviously be, I'm coming for you, Green Gages guy. I'd like to ask you to thank Sakisa very much for everything.
Thank you.
And then I'm going to ask Flo and Joan to play us out in the style you'd expect from people who've spent extensive time in Toronto. And I do have some coordinates here.
Cool.
Toronto's quite a big city. It's not like I would have been
able... Worn a T-shirt to this recording that says, Home is Toronto.
That's true, actually. I just thought it might be a conversation starter. Yeah, it was a long old trip not to find you there, I must say. Anyway, thanks for being here.
Thank you again for having us. Okay, so we got this script 24 hours ago. We assume because you were spending a lot of your time researching us on the dark web. This song is called The Travelling Song.
On the road again, and baby, there's no time for talking. I said I would walk 500 miles in these boots that were made for walking. Oh, one day I'll fly away, come fly with me, leave on a jet plane. Or we could take a yellow submarine somewhere beyond the sea. And I don't care how I get there, I'll get here if I can. Yes, I'll fly away on a Zephyr. Ernie's fastest milk cart in the West.
Guess there's some more.
Then I remember life is a highway, so I got in my fast car. I was on the road to nowhere, blessing the rains down in Africa. I've been around the world and I through wind and rain, gone river deep, mountain high. I've even been on George's midnight train. Country roads to take me home, to take me home to the place I belong, and that place is Hampshire.
That's Flo and Joan. You've also been listening to Sakisa. Me, Mark Watson. This is Mark Watson Talks About Life. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Mark Watson Talks A Bit About Life was written and performed by Mark Watson, Flo and Joan, and special guest Sakisa. It was produced by Leanne Coop.
And it was an Impatient production for BBC Radio 4. Bye.
Lily has something to tell Elizabeth, and Helen has the bit between her teeth in a couple of minutes. It's all going on in Ambridge after the news.
There are over 1.5 million postcodes in the UK.
The Patch on BBC Radio 4.
We randomly pick one out.
So which one do I press? Clear the random postcode?
And uncover a story there you probably wouldn't have heard about.
They can't get the staff to put in here, let alone a new prison with 700 more staff.
He said, we know exactly what's up there.
We're looking for something that shouldn't be up there.
The Patch on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
When the police lock these people up, who looks after them? Well, it's prison officers, and it's all done unseen.
On Wednesday mornings at 9.